Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. Are you ready for some health news? Well, it's a big week for football, but it's also a good week to take stock. Yeah, we're in the middle of January. And do something healthy on your own behalf. And you can do precisely that by listening to an hour of Intelligent Medicine. And you can also participate by calling us at 888-302-3684 if you've got a question about health, nutrition, you want to work out a thorny medical problem. Please call us, 888-302-3684. We're live, we're available, and we aim to inform you. And we got a couple of calls on the line, but before we get to that, let me share some disappointing news this week out of Washington. You know, this year we've been talking a lot about the DGAs, the Dietary Guidelines for Americans. There's been a lot of controversy about the DGAs. Including allegations of incompetence and bias and fixes on among the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee, which, an assembly of scientists, but they come with their own biases. They're also lobbied extensively by industries that want to sell meat or sell grain or sell dairy products. And so there's been a big brouhaha about formulating these dietary guidelines. And I'm sorry to say that we're extremely disappointed by the dietary guidelines that have been issued by the USDA, because they decided, it's also controversial that basically they're going to keep going with the status quo. And for another 5 years, Americans will be laboring under the misconceptions promulgated by the Dietary Guidelines for America. So it's a meaningless document. It's a consensus document. And I'm going to quote from Nina Teicholz. She's been a frequent guest on our podcasts, which you can access at drhoffman.com. She's the author of A Big Fat Surprise, which is a great book debunking our previous infatuation with the low-fat diet. She documents how that diet came into existence, how it's been perpetuated, and how its assumptions are scientifically flawed. And so I'm going to quote her. She writes, "With the exception of a cap on sugar, these DGAs are virtually identical to those of the past 35 years, during which time obesity and diabetes have skyrocketed. Given the same advice, it's not clear why we should expect different outcomes." You know the expression, the definition of insanity is to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different outcome? Well, that's precisely what they're doing with these dietary guidelines. She says, especially when consumption data shows that over the past decades, Americans have in fact followed USDA advice, cutting back on butter 14%, whole milk by 73%, and red meat by 17%, while increasing consumption of grains by 41% and oils by more than 90%. And guess what the result is? Due to high-level concern about the failure of our nutrition policy to improve health, Congress recently mandated the first-ever peer review of the guidelines by the National Academy of Medicine, but it's really not done a lot of good because we're stuck with the same antiquated, outmoded, not scientifically substantiated guidelines. And, to wit, the guidelines still endorse eating less meat. They also advise to limit calories from added sugars, but they also stigmatize saturated fats, which recently were exonerated in studies, and they still say avoid whole milk despite recent studies that found benefits to drinking whole milk over skim milk, which has less in the way of fat and protein and more carbohydrates. So, you know, basically, you know, it's like a, making a sausage. You know, you take a lot of scraps, throw it together, and the outcome is a big mishmash. They do have a suggestion, though, to increase Americans' physical activity. They suggest that people engage in walking meetings. What's that? It's a business meeting where individuals continuously walk around. So I guess if you're going to have a meeting, they can say, well, let's go outside and let's have a meeting. Like, walk around the building. Or perhaps they're saying American business should be using musical chairs. Or perhaps we should install exercise bikes around conference tables. I'm not sure what they're talking about. They do encourage farmers markets, community gardens, and that's a good idea. They say you should have plain popcorn instead of buttered. That's not much better. You should eat bread instead of croissants and English muffins instead of biscuits. And they also encourage Americans to eat a piece of fruit instead of a donut, cookie, ice cream, or candy. Okay, good, fine. But they stuck to guidelines which suggest that we reduce our intake of fat. But at the same time, they've lifted strictures on cholesterol. That's interesting. Finally, the cholesterol hypothesis has been challenged. And they finally had to acknowledge that dietary cholesterol doesn't have that much to do with cardiovascular risk. Our body makes the vast majority of cholesterol that we find in our bloodstream. So, yeah, ultimately, I think we're stuck with dietary guidelines that still don't reflect the latest science and that mostly should be looked at with a very, very critical eye. All right, let's take some calls. Let's talk to Ellen in Port Charlotte, Florida. Our number, by the way, 888-302-3684. Thanks for calling, Ellen.
Yes, good afternoon. Dr. Hoffman, first of all, I fully agree with you on what you just spoke about the dietary guidelines, but that's not why I'm calling.
Sure.
Many years ago, Dr. Hoffman, I overcame a debilitating condition as a result of your wisdom and your advice. And
that's nice
I
to hear.
Know. Yeah, absolutely. And I know that if anyone can give me the right advice for my sister, you can. She was just diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Both simultaneously. Simultaneously, both forms of Hodgkin's disease. I mean, both
correct.
Forms of lymphoma. Right, because Hodgkin's disease, they're subtypes of lymphoma.
So, okay, so she hit me with a double whammy in a way. But mm-hmm. The point is, Dr. Hoffman, I am totally depending on your expertise as to where would you recommend her to go for treatment?
This is complicated because, you know, I got to say that, this is hard to say, is that a lot of people totally reject conventional cancer treatments. And they think, well, you know, they characterize it as, burn / poison, you know, burn with radiation / with surgery, poison with chemotherapy. And I have to say that especially when it comes to Hodgkin's disease, maybe to a little lesser extent, non-Hodgkin's disease, conventional treatments really do work up to a certain extent. So I wouldn't eschew conventional treatment. I would get the best conventional treatment possible. And that doesn't mean you have to go to some very strange or esoteric place, you know, go overseas or to Mexico or something like that. You can get very good, state-of-the-art treatment for Hodgkin's disease and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma at a major cancer center, university-affiliated, medical school-affiliated cancer center. And the therapy is pretty much, you know, it's standardized across the country. So that's number one. However, I would add a component of natural support that's very important. And it really depends on the type of treatment that she's about to get. If she's going to get radiation, there are certain things that may not be compatible with radiation. It's complicated. And there are certain things that really protect against the harmful effects of radiation and may even enhance the benefits of radiation. She might benefit from intravenous vitamin C at high doses because that has an anti-cancer effect and may augment the benefits of the conventional treatment. It can be done simultaneously. Certain types of chemo are washed out by conventional vitamins and even nutraceuticals. So you have to, you know, pick and choose which ones you're using. But there are many that can be very helpful against cancer. So, when I get a cancer call like this, it's really kind of hard for me to say, well, I'm going to answer in the space of, a couple of minutes on the radio, very cavalier way, what to do for a complicated cancer. You can't really do that. I do that in consultation with patients. I sit down. It's very laborious. We take a long history. We try to find out specifically what stage of cancer they have, what type of cancer, what their nutritional status is, and what kind of conventional therapy that they're having. And then we try to match a strategy to that that doesn't get in the way of the conventional therapy. And by the way, there are some cancers where I would choose to just go natural altogether because the prospects with conventional therapy are very limited indeed. So it depends on the cancer. But in this case, I you could also get some good resources from cancerdecisions.com. It's a service. You pay a fee and you get information. That's a very, we've interviewed them about their overview of all forms of natural therapy as well as all forms of conventional therapy. They sort of take an impartial view of, which therapies work best for certain cancers. That's a good resource that'll open up a lot of avenues to you in terms of treatment. But to go further, I really don't think I should because this has to be highly individualized.
But, all right. Well, I think we will start with cancerdecision.com. and get some advice from them. And perhaps even I can get Judy to come and visit you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I mean, it would require a little bit of, just interaction on a very detailed level to find out what works best for her. All right. Thanks for your call and thanks for your compliment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
We know probiotics are good for digestive health, but what about your skin? I'm Kat James, author of The Truth About Beauty. Common skincare products can disrupt the balance of the friendly bacteria on your skin. That's why Dr. O'Hara's probiotics merge ancient Japanese fermentation skills with probiotic and prebiotic nutrients into a revolutionary 100% natural skincare line to help revive and support balanced microecology for healthy skin. Their Kampuku Beauty Bar, honored with the Best of Beauty Award by Better Nutrition, promotes optimal skin ecology while clarifying and rebalancing even sensitive skin without drying. Their Magaroku lotion combines Dr. O'Hara's award-winning pre- and probiotic isolate with 14 oxygenating plant extracts plus one of the most skin-compatible emollients known to restore your glow. Research confirms it inhibits growth of harmful bacteria that can cause skin disorders. Use it alone or with your favorite serums. Dr. O'Hara's probiotic skincare is available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine stores.
For more intelligent medicine, download our free podcast at drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. We'd like to hear from you. 888-302-3684 is our number. Several lines are still open, so you can get your call through to me still during today's broadcast. We'd love to field your questions. 888-302-3684 for questions on today's edition of Intelligent Medicine. All right, this is a big football weekend. Are you ready for some football? We've got a lot of games this weekend. It's a wild card weekend. And the New England Patriots have a bye because they have a good enough record to not require a playoff spot this weekend. So Tom Brady is resting, getting ready for the game in a couple of weeks. And part of his program and he's like really the Iron Man of football. He's been playing how many years? He's now 38, and he's still playing great. He doesn't seem broken down at all. And he looks slim and trim and in fine physical condition. And one of the things about Tom Brady, he really gives you the impression that he is very mentally alert. He is able to scramble and throw the football on the move and hit receivers, and that is no mean skill. It's one thing to throw a football. It's another thing to throw it while you're in motion, while you're being chased by a 320-pound lineman about to get slammed to the ground and hit a receiver who's also in motion downfield. And this is a very, very calculated program that he's engaged in. His training is very rigorous, It involves mindfulness and it involves special drills. But there's also a very, very significant dietary component, as revealed by a new profile of Tom Brady and his wife, supermodel Gisele Bündchen. They have a personal chef, Alan Campbell, who has revealed his dietary secrets. 80% of what they eat is vegetables, Campbell said. He buys the freshest vegetables, and if it's not organic, Brady doesn't want to eat it. Lots of whole grains, brown rice, quinoa, millet, and beans. The other 20% is lean meats, grass-fed organic steak, duck every now and then, and chicken. As for fish, mostly cooked wild salmon. Brady is very mindful about the vegetables he allows onto his plate. For example, he doesn't eat nightshades because they're pro-inflammatory. So no tomatoes, peppers, green peppers, eggplants. He says he's very cautious about tomatoes because they cause inflammation. On a rare occasion, he'll have a banana. But for the most part, the quarterback stays away from any and all fruit. I guess he wants to eat low glycemic index. No coffee, caffeine, gluten, or dairy either. Pretty cool. And it's not just for Tom. The whole family adheres pretty much the exact same diet. Gisele, who looks great, although she's probably pushing 40. The kids, they all look great. And for snacks, raw granola, veggie sushi, brown rice, avocado, carrot, cucumber. The menu is very seasonal, which means in the wintertime there's going to be more red meat and more soups and root vegetables, more hearty foods. In the summer, they eat lighter, more salads. So pretty cool that he's a real role model for America's youth, eating a healthy diet to stay in the best condition possible so he can be a superstar on the gridiron in a couple of weeks. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We'll take your phone calls momentarily on this weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine.
If you're like me, you don't have time to be sick, yet our busy lifestyles can leave us vulnerable. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Do you know that in Japanese, Kayo means strength? This winter, find your immune strength with four key natural immune-boosting supplements from our friends at Kyolic. It's what I call the Kyolic Advantage, and what I use myself. Try Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract 103 for natural immune wellness and cardiovascular health. Since 70% of your immune system is in the digestive tract, Kyodophilus bolsters immunity and gut health with shelf-stable beneficial bacteria. On the go, try Kyo Green, a convenient powdered greens drink mix that offers a natural source of key vitamins and minerals. And don't forget ModuCare, a unique combination of plant sterols proven effective at balancing and strengthening immunity. So eat right, exercise, and get the Kyolic Advantage to optimize your immune health today. Available at fine health food stores everywhere.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you, and we'll take your calls in just a moment. But I'll share with you that this month, actually starting around Christmas time, it's a strange time to start a dietary regimen, I went on something called the Whole 30 diet. It's quite viral these days. It's making its rounds in social media and on the internet. And it's a diet that, it's very interesting. It's paleo, sort of. It's somewhat low carb, but not totally low carb. There are no grains. There are no legumes. And I could do without the beans and lentils, but when it comes to peanut butter, which is a lentil, I mean, which is a legume, I had some withdrawal pangs. There's no sugar, no added sugar whatsoever. And fruit is allowed in moderation, no juice, no sweeteners. And it does allow nightshade vegetables if you're not sensitive to them. It does allow potatoes and sweet potatoes and squash to satisfy your carb cravings. And I'm not trying to lose weight, so I do include carbohydrates. But I'm mostly eating fish, chicken, eggs, meat, lots of salads and vegetables, hearty soups. These are my mainstays these days. And with a handful of nuts, no omega-6 cooking oils. I mostly use either ghee or coconut oil or even lard for cooking. Yeah, lard. But it's from uncured bacon. And, you know, I have to say that it's very interesting. The main effect, at first I was going through some withdrawal. I felt a little weak, a little tired, a little hungry, some cravings. By the way, no, zero alcohol. No alcohol. No, you know, not even a drop. And initially I went through some cravings, but I'm now to the point where I'm pretty okay about reduced carbohydrates. I'm pretty equanimous about it. My cravings are reduced. I do get hungry. After many hours, I get the kind of hollow feeling I really need to eat. But then I eat a lot of fat and protein, and it satisfies my hunger. And I'm eating less. I don't know whether I'm particularly losing weight, but the main effect is that I feel a real sense of mental clarity and evenness and focus. It really helps in that regard. And it's worthwhile trying. Lots of resources available for you, and I wrote an article about it at drhoffman.com. You can read that article, and you can avail yourself of the many resources on the internet for the Whole 30 diet. If you want to give it a try, just kind of experiment, see what happens. It's helpful, certainly, for weight loss, for diabetes, many patients with aches and pains and fatigue, autoimmune disease, fibromyalgia, find it beneficial. It's an exploration worth checking out. And I'll be providing people with more of an update as I complete the diet with my final assessment of the Whole 30 diet. So look for it, subscribe to our newsletter, follow me on Facebook. I'll be sharing lots of information. All right, let's take a call from Mitch. Welcome. Hi, Mitch. Hello, Mitch.
Hey, Mitch.
Yeah, Mitch. Mitch, you're calling me Mitch? Okay, let's take a call from Barbara. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I have a question. I've been taking DGL, you know, right before I eat, like about 20 minutes, and then I eat for the past 2 years. And I know it definitely does raise my blood pressure.
Well, wait a minute. Hang on for a second here, because DGL is deglycerinated. Uh-huh. Deglycerinated means that they take out the part that raises blood pressure. So unless you've got a bad batch of DGL, it's very unlikely that it will have the licorice-like effect of causing you to retain sodium and have blood pressure increase. So
well,
that's very unusual.
I called the company yesterday, and they said it has 1% of this product in it.
That shouldn't be significant. That really shouldn't be significant enough to raise your blood pressure.
But every time when I take that.
So somebody ask you this. When you don't take it, your blood pressure is totally normal?
I've been trying to not take it for the past 3 weeks.
Do you have normal blood pressure now?
I don't know. I could feel anxious.
Well, I gotta discount that then, because it sounds like you're anxious and apprehensive about a potential side effect that's very unlikely to occur. And if you want to really do a science fair project on yourself, you have to take the DGL, tell me you have high blood pressure, and then stop the DGL and tell me that the blood pressure is significantly lower. Because I kind of, you know, that's an unscientific conclusion that you're arriving at, that with a 1%, very tiny, you know, very hard to completely purify a product and take out all the glycyrrhizinic acid. So there's a tiny residue, but that's not probably enough to raise your blood pressure. I'm not really going to go with your impression that this is the cause of your high blood pressure.
When I take the DGL, I normally have to counteract it with taurine.
Yeah, but, you know, listen, this isn't good science here. You know, I think we really need to see if indeed there's an association. I just want to go further on this because it's probably not the case. DGL is used to treat inflammation in the mouth, in the throat, in the esophagus, in the stomach. It's very good for ulcers. And, you know, you take too much licorice, you can raise your blood pressure, but never seen it with DGL. I doubt that that's the case. Let's move on. Let's talk to Chris. I'm sorry. Yeah, we'll talk to Francis in Long Island. How you doing? Hey, come to the phone.
Yes, we're right here. Hold on, please.
Oh, I got to hold on?
Hello?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
So Francis is a female, huh? Okay.
Yes, female.
Okay,
yeah.
So not Frank. Okay, Francis, how you doing?
Mm-hmm. Good.
So what's your question, Francis?
Okay, I'm a 74-year-old, you know, female, And I thought I had a urinary tract infection, and I went to the doctor, and he told me I didn't have one. He took a culture and everything, and
okay.
I'm fine.
Okay.
But I've been urinating a lot lately.
Yeah.
And he wants me to go to a urologist.
Okay.
And I'm getting kind of anxious because I'm thinking, like, what's wrong with me? I never had any trouble before.
Well, it's quite, first of all, not anything to be anxious about, because, you know, it's pretty common for women your age to have a urinary frequency for one reason or another, not necessarily due to an infection. Now, I just read an interesting article about the subject of, you know, if you get a urinalysis and they see some bacteria, and then they call you back and the doctor says, well, hey, you know, you have some bacteria in your urine. Maybe I should prescribe an antibiotic. How you feeling? And you say, I don't know. I feel fine. That's what's called asymptomatic bacteria. In other words, you don't have symptoms and you got some bacteria in your urine. Very common in older women, often treated with antibiotics. They say, well, you know, we better treat this. There's some bacteria in your urine. Let's just send you an antibiotic prescription. Well, I'm fine, doc. Yeah, but we got to treat it anyway because you might get a urinary tract infection. Bad idea, according to the study, because it suggests that it doesn't reduce the incidence of subsequent urinary tract infections. Plus, it reduces the chance that you'll respond to an antibiotic when it's given. You'll develop antibiotic resistance. Okay, that's not your problem. Your problem is the opposite. You, doctor, can't find anything, and you have symptoms.
Yes.
Well, the
mm-hmm.
symptoms could be due to some sort of inflammation of your bladder. It could be due to just, you know, sometimes urinary frequency is related to the low levels of estrogen that women have after menopause. Sometimes a urologist, especially one who, you know, the urologists who focus on the prostate and men's problems, they're also what are called urogynecologists. They work with women who have urinary problems. And sometimes they'll actually tell you to administer a little bit of estrogen or take what's called an S-ring, insert it vaginally, to nourish mm-hmm. the tissue up there and make it more able to, you know, it improves the tone of the smooth muscles in your bladder. It kind of nourishes the tissue there and makes it more likely that you'll be able to hold your urine. And there's a raft of medications that can reduce urinary frequency. I'm not particularly fond of those. But, you know, the main thing is, yeah, you know, rule out this, rule out that. I mean, it's not some dire problem, probably. You know, sometimes it's also related to a food you're eating. You know, certain foods may trigger urinary frequency. I've seen this with wheat. I've seen this with dairy, especially. Kids who suffer from enuresis, which is bedwetting, often respond to dairy elimination. So sometimes we'll do a diet, you know, elimination diet, get folks off of certain foods which may be precipitants of bladder allergy. There really is such a thing. And then their urinary problems disappear. But go get checked out by the urologist. Don't worry. It's just a precaution. Find out. They probably won't find a specific cause, and the end of the appointment will be, oh, well, we'll just give you a medication to slow your urination. You know, you turn on the news and you see tons of these ads for medications for, you know, for urinary problems. This is a very, very common problem, both men and women. But you don't want to just take a medication. You want to actually see if you can find a cause and alleviate the problem. Thanks for your call. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and you're listening to Intelligent Medicine.
Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, updated several times weekly. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. We're answering your phone calls. And hey, if you decide not to call this hour and you want to pose a question, you can email us your question to radioprogram, one word, radioprogram@AOL.com, and we will use your question as grist for the mill, as a subject for our weekly Q&A with Layla, our podcast, which you can listen to in maybe a week or two, but we'll eventually get around to answering your question on the air on our weekly podcast. All right, let's talk now to Chris in the Bronx. Hey, I know the Bronx. I went to med school there.
Yes. Hello, hello, doctor.
How you doing?
Very good. Albert Einstein University. Thank you. I heard you
yes,
say
indeed.
That before.
Yeah. Good place, good place. I know the Bronx.
Okay. I have a question about intermittent fasting. I remember you mentioned it a couple of months ago, and you said you preferred or you experimented with a modified version, maybe having a 10-hour window and then fasting for say 14 hours and
mm-hmm.
and working that way.
Let me explain what Chris is talking about. You know, intermittent fasting. There's some benefits to intermittent fasting in terms of weight loss. But that doesn't mean that you have to go for prolonged periods of time without food. It means that you might do something like the Dukan program, popular in Europe, which is a 5-2 program. It's you eat very sparingly 2 days a week, maybe, you know, 500, 700 calories those days, very light, you know, maybe light salad, and maybe a little protein, no carbs. And then the rest of the days you eat a good diet, but normally. And that gives you a little bit of a jump start to your metabolism, because it turns out that caloric restriction makes you live longer. It may also tune up your immune system, and it may boost your metabolic rate a little bit. So without completely shutting down your metabolic rate, you know, you go on a long-term fast, your body gets into conservation mode and holds on to the calories and makes it harder to lose fat. Your thyroid slows down and metabolism slows down. That ain't good. So what you're talking about, Chris is still with us, is, you know, going longer without eating. And, you know, they talk about breakfast. Well, it's the breaking of the fast. For some people, you know, eating maybe at 11 o'clock, you know, getting up, doing some exercise, you know, and then eating later and confining their eating to maybe a 10-hour window or even less, like a 7 or 8-hour window, and then not eating past, say, 6 or 7 o'clock at night, there's a prolonged period where it affects your fasting, and that may actually be good for your metabolism and for overall wellness. So that's what you're talking about, right?
Yes, yes. And I noticed I seem to have more energy. My weight has always been pretty good. I run a lot, so that's not really an issue for me, but I like the idea giving my body a rest and possibly boosting my hormone levels. I've heard of anecdotal statements that it boosts your growth hormone level and stuff like that. But I'm not really clear about that.
There is some evidence that that's the case. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, yes. I was wondering. I'm not worried about losing weight, and I'm trying to maintain my weight. And so I don't know if fasting for say 14, 15, 16 hours is better than fasting.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that this is, you know, you have to kind of individualize it. Different strokes for different folks. You got to find out what works for you. If you're unacceptably losing weight, then it's not a good plan for you because you're already thin. I think, you know, it varies because your requirements you're very athletic and thin are maybe very different from someone who's sedentary or has some physical disability that prevents them from exercising very much, has to lose a lot of weight fast. That would be a different kind of program, and you know, different strokes for different folks. But you're on the right track, and I think it's actually going to be helpful for you. All right. Let's talk to Marianne in New Jersey. How you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Yep.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Okay. My husband has high platelets, and I was wondering if there is anything natural we could give him.
Yeah, I you know, high platelets, which is thrombocytosis as opposed to thrombocytopenia. Thrombocytopenia is low platelets. We got a lot of calls about that. But high platelets is a problem, too, because if you have too many platelets, what will happen is your blood will clot. And so is he on any medication for that?
Hydroxyurea.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about it is he's actually on one of the most ancient therapies known to man. You know, there's a type of therapy called urine therapy. Wow, that doesn't sound very appetizing. People drink urine to treat certain conditions. It's a traditional treatment in Ayurvedic medicine. And probably is not much good for anything, except it happens to be good for this condition. Not that he's drinking urine, but he's taking urea, which is the main component in urine. Now, don't say that's icky because he's getting pure chemical USP urea. That's a, you know, pharmaceutical medication. But it actually tends to suppress the platelets pretty well. So that's an example of natural therapy, don't you think? He's actually employing a natural therapy. Is there a vitamin that's going to help him? Well, probably if he's got a lot of sticky platelets running around, he needs more fish oil. He can do high-dose fish oil. And he might just need to regulate his immune system with adequate levels of key vitamins, including vitamin D. Vitamin D is particularly good for these types of conditions. Make sure he has adequate vitamin D. But I have to say, there's no specific treatment like, you know, vitamin X, which lowers platelets in this condition. Sometimes this is an expression of some sort of challenge to the body, like some chronic infection or chronic inflammation. I would look to that if I were to treat him and make sure that he's at optimal weight and that he's on an optimal diet. And sometimes these conditions straighten out in response to sort of a general nutrition approach, getting rid of the bad things in the diet, accentuating the good, taking a well-balanced nutritional program, including some component of exercise. That may help to stem the tide of this increase in his platelets. All right?
Okay.
But no magic bullet. No magic bullet for this.
All right. Thank you.
My pleasure. All right. So here's an idea. You know, there's a big craze going on about juicing. Juicing is very popular these days. And one of the debates within the juicing community is whether to use a juicer. You know, when I got into juicing way back in the 80s, I was way into juicing. I got a Champion juicer. It was this big, very honking machine that had, I don't know, I think it had like 1 horsepower. You know, it was very, very powerful. And you could put virtually anything into it, and it would pulverize it with an amazing racket and squeeze the juice out of it. And then you would have lots and lots of pulp, which you would have to laboriously clean off and throw away. You'd fill up a garbage can with pulp. And other people suggest, no, don't juice. Blenderize your fruits and vegetables. And then you get kind of a slurry that you drink down with the particulate matter and fiber of the vegetables. So which is better? Well, here's actually an interesting article that sheds light on that. It sounds very technical. It's called Non-Extractable Polyphenols, a Major Dietary Antioxidant. And they abbreviate this as NEP, N-E-P-P. These non-extractable polyphenols are very hard to release from food by mastication, by the acid pH of the stomach, or digestive enzymes, or by physical manipulation, like juicing. So these are like compounds that have important effects in the body. They're potent antioxidants. They also act as food for the microbiome. They have great significance in relation to gastrointestinal health. They increase antioxidant and antiproliferative capacities. Antiproliferative means anti-cancer. And they reduce the potential for intestinal tumor development and modify gene expression, thus preventing gastrointestinal cancers. These are the things that you get in blenderized juices as opposed to extracted juices. So the suggestion, well, eat fresh fruit, that you can't go wrong with that. You get less concentrated sugar. But if you're going to go the juicing route, use the Nutribullet, use a juicer, use a something that doesn't extract the juice but that gives you the pulp as well. Well, thank you very much for joining us. And remember that this program is just the tip of the iceberg of the intelligent medicine phenomenon. You can find lots more content at drhoffman.com, including podcasts and articles. And also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Have a great weekend. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.